Hey guys, it's Andy from Good Friends Bad Movies here, and I'm with Matt and Ross. Just before we start the episode, just wanted to say thanks for everyone that's liked us on Facebook, followed us on Twitter, and subscribed on wherever you can get it on. So Acast and iTunes at the moment, thanks for that. Really appreciate it. If you could take just 5 minutes, or it probably takes shorter than that, just to give us a review.
Half a minute.
Just give us a review on iTunes, that would be great. It'll really help us in these early kind of couple of months and episodes, just while we're getting things on the
five-star.
And of course, share with your friends if you think they'll like it.
Five-star.
Let them know.
Share with your friends if you don't think they'll like it.
Yeah, exactly, man. Just
controversy feeds.
Just share it.
Feed something. I'm not sure what
Have the hard conversation. Have the difficult conversation with your friend.
If they don't like the podcast, you need to split with them. It's the basic.
That's how it goes. Your wife, your partner.
Five-star.
Split with them. Your dog. If they don't like us, split with them. So you can tweet us at GFBM Podcast. We're on Instagram, but that's really useless because we're an audio podcast at the same name.
Take 5 stars.
We could
take pictures.
You can Instagram us at GFBM Podcast. You can email us at GFBMPodcast@gmail.com.
Send us questions or
send
abuse.
Us questions
or abuse
or
reviews.
Pictures.
Dick pics mostly, please. Movie suggestions, tweet at us, and you can like us on Facebook as well. That's just Good Friends Bad Movies. You'll be able to find that easily. But again, thanks for listening, guys.
Ross doesn't have Twitter.
Ross is a hermit. He loves him to see.
If you want Ross, send him a carrier pigeon.
Yeah.
Or two.
But thanks for listening and enjoy the episode.
5 stars.
High energy. Everybody. Yo! Oh, what's up? Welcome to Good Friends Bad Movies Podcast. My name's Andy R. I'm here with Maddie.
Hey.
And Rossi.
Say.
thanks for joining us again for episode 4.
Episode 4.
Promise this is going to be a good one.
Yeah.
We've taken a break. We had some good times over the winter times.
I had no good times.
Matt was
this
working.
This is the only thing I'm living
down
for.
Down the mines to keep all of us warm. But
get some fresh coal.
Back from hiatus. Back in action.
Today, we're going to watch a film called Dungeons & Dragons.
Classic. Based on the classic tabletop RPG.
Which we play and we enjoy. So
yes.
Hopefully this movie will be nothing but genius.
I feel like this will be nothing like
the game
we play.
This will be an exact recreation of our Dungeon Master's story.
I feel that it will be.
I feel that's how it works.
I disagree.
See, Matt is our Dungeon Master when we play, and he's really good, and he draws pictures for us and paints this entire universe, and it's beautiful. That's powerful.
Was Jeremy Irons in your story at any point?
He was every character at one point.
Or any of the Wayans brothers in our storyline?
That's all the bartenders. Is it all
every
my,
one of them? Every
all my bartenders have the same accent. And they have the same motion.
They have the same voice and the same motion.
They're always
cleaning a glass behind the bar. It's like, oi, what are you not doing it?
That's bartender's job. We've got to keep the glasses clean.
He's the traveling. He's like a freelance traveling barman.
And I feel like it adds continuity to the world.
It does. Character depth as well, when all of the characters sound the same.
You know, just to give you that sense of immersion.
Yeah, man.
You would probably wouldn't have had it otherwise. If I had more than one bartender, you'd have probably been confused.
You'd be like, fuck.
I mean, if you're going city to city, you want the same bartender.
Exactly. That's what I want.
Want good service.
That's correct.
Anywhere, at any point.
Do you want to give us a little synopsis?
Okay,
of Dungeons and Dragons?
I'll read it from the front this time, actually, because there's quite a lot of stuff. We've got descriptions, we've got reviews.
Ooh.
And stuff. So we've got Dungeons and Dragons. This is more than a game. Ellipsis.
Is that the tagline?
That's the tagline.
It's more than a game.
Daily Star reviews this as all action entertainment.
Daily Star is a very reputable source.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when I'm looking at a movie I want to go and see, I don't bother checking, you know, IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes.
Nah.
I get a Daily Star.
Roger Ebert, get to fuck.
Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert. Rest I mean, hack fraud.
Daily Star.
But also, we also have 73 minutes of extra features.
Fuck.
Got a trailer. Two documentaries.
It's like fucking Lord of the Rings, man.
Deleted scenes, special effects deconstruction, and artwork. Well, that, that could be interesting.
Fuck.
This movie's gonna blow you away, TV hits.
Fuck.
Sword fights and special effects, unlikely to disappoint even the most ardent fans of The Phantom Menace.
What?
They're referencing The Phantom Menace. Like
sword fights and special effects, unlikely to disappoint even the most ardent fans of The Phantom Menace.
This is very from a very by the specific time period.
Yes, where everybody was hyped about The Phantom Menace.
And if you enjoy swords and sorcery, then this is a movie for you. Said Miz. I have no idea what that
is.
Miz. Miz. Is that not a girls magazine?
No, the Miz is a wrestler.
No, the Miz is a wrestler.
I think it was the Miz.
It's the wrestler. The Miz
himself. If you're a fan of swords and sorcery.
Well, I'm sure the Miz was like a female magazine which talked about lady parts. I'm sure. I don't know why.
Only
I'm
about
sure,
lady parts.
But,
we'll figure that out later.
I'm about 50%.
I think ladies' magazines have got more to do with just their parts.
No, it's mostly
just
about
vagina tips.
It's sort of like they sort of talk about people getting questions. It's like, you know,
like Mystic Mog.
Agony Aunt. So Mystic Mog, yeah. They're writing questions and it's sort of like, you know, oh, my vagina flaps have both fallen off. Is this bad? And they sort of, you know, the answer in the magazine is always the same answer. No, this is, you're gonna die, go see your GP.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next person will ask, my boyfriend is cheating on me, is this normal? And they'll reply, no, this is not normal, go see your GP. And it just goes on like that. And I'm sure that's the same type of magazine as what I just described.
And the GP stands for Guild Paladin.
Guild Paladin.
Who's who you're going to see if your health bar is low.
Yeah, it's not a general practitioner.
No. But, okay. What was your synopsis?
Let's go to our synopsis.
I was going to get my usual ukulele.
What's wrong with you? You got a ukulele?
Like a little bard tune.
That fits character.
Should.
Oh, it's still a little
just
bit.
Vamp.
Let's just have a minute of dead air.
So, Ross.
Yes, Matthew.
Let's ask you a personal question. The fans have been asking. You know, on the Twitter, on the Instagrams, on the Facebooks, and they want to know, are you single?
I can't say.
And describe yourself in 12 words.
12 words? 12 single words or a sentence? Or
no, it's 12 single words, not a sentence. they specifically requested that you don't speak in sentences while you give us the 12 words. The words can be hyphenated, but they'd prefer if they were not.
Oh, very specific requests.
Right. First word, go, now.
Adventurous.
Adventurous.
Oh.
Second word.
Happy.
Third word.
Kind.
Fourth word.
Courageous.
Fifth word.
Loyal.
Sixth word.
Blah.
Seventh word.
Can't think of anything else anymore.
That's not a word. Eighth word.
Matthew.
Eighth word.
Ross.
10th word.
Music.
11th word.
Wrestling.
12th word.
Game.
There you go, that's Ross in 12 words.
Game for anything. That's what I meant by game.
It means butt sex.
Oh, I've got my music. It's time to read the synopsis to D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, the movie.
No.
There are many planets throughout the multiverse. Oh no.
I need to get like a good like.
Okay.
Give me a bongo over, Andrew, and I'll.
You won't be able to hear me talk.
Just talk loud.
This is Dungeons and Dragons. There are many planets throughout the multiverse. Worlds where legendary characters walk the earth and fill the sky. here be dragons. In some of these worlds, man has learned to shape and focus the natural weave of elemental forces. On these worlds, it is known as magic. It is magic that dominates the empire of Izmir, and only mages, those elite few born with the ability to harness its power, have the right to rule. All others are consigned to a life of lower station. In the principal city of Sundal, the emperor rules from his royal palace in conjunction with the council of mages. The standing imperial army, the Crimson Guard, and their commander, Damodar, enforce the law of the mages throughout the empire. But it is by the incredible might of the royal scepter and its ability to command the immensely powerful gold dragons that the emperor and his ancestors have forged a mighty empire in the aftermath of the Great War. They have brought stability and prosperity to Izmir for many centuries. Until now.
That was awesome.
So, oh mate. Whoa. That was a quick synopsis.
Get on the couch, quick. That was quite long.
That was a very long synopsis. So this is Dungeons and Dragons movie. This has got one of the Wayans brothers in it.
Jeremy Irons.
I can't tell from the cover looking at it. There's a dragon in it.
Dragon played by, I'm not sure. We've got
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis.
But anyway, we're gonna crack on and watch it.
Justin Weiland, Marlon Wayans, Fora Birch, Zoe McClellan, Kristen Wilson, Lee Ehrenberg, with Bruce Payne and Jeremy Irons.
I'm excited to see Jeremy Irons.
We will be right back after this song, Dungeons and Dragons.
And we're back.
Yes.
What a film, mate.
Welcome back. We just watched Dungeons and Dragons, and what a film that was. I really enjoyed it. Definitely my favourite so far.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was silly.
But it was the most fucking stupid thing I've ever seen.
This was made a year after Lord of the Rings.
Before. It was released a year before Lord of the Rings.
A year after Phantom Menace. Probably
a better way of putting it.
It was made by the same company, New Line Cinema, so... Maybe there was a bit of a kind of cross reference. Maybe some people were talking between the two movies, like, oh, Lord of the Rings has taken a while. We need to get something else out in the meantime to keep the nerds happy.
I don't know.
Swords and Sorcery.
I looked up some stuff about it, and the guy that directed it didn't want to direct the movie. He tried to get the studio to hire, like, Francis Coppola and stuff like that. But the studio refused and vetoed him and basically told him, because he had the rights, he had to direct the movie. So with a director who'd never really directed directing. Well,
probably never played D&D in his life.
No.
He has?
He was a big fan. Okay. He fought to get the rights since the age of, I think, 19? He's had the rights for about 10 years as he raised funds.
He got the rights and then didn't want to direct it? Or are you? I'm confused.
He didn't want to direct it.
Oh, he just wanted it to be made.
Yeah.
Okay.
He wanted to just, I think
he did a story treatment.
Ah.
I see. Okay.
So he wanted to, like, produce it and write it, but not direct it.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't understand the logic of why you'd want to make a film about a game that's basically based upon making your own stories and...
Pretty much.
Stuff.
I mean, there's established, like, lore and
the... Yeah, I get that.
So there is, like... There's, like, stuff that's happened. There's stories there.
Yeah, you do get stories that you can work through.
But even at that, it's a very strange property to take and try and translate into a film.
Yeah, it's not like it's a book that's got a very clear storyline. Dungeons and Dragons doesn't have a story.
I mean, you've obviously got, you know, dragons are a big thing, and you've got different races, and you've got different...
Classes, you've got, like,
not even the classes, but you've got different
monsters.
monsters and war, and you've got, you know, obviously the dungeons. And that's all stuff that's established, but it just doesn't make sense to put it to a movie. Or even why get the rights to Dungeons and Dragons and then make, why even get the rights to begin with? There's not really no sense there. It's like me getting the rights to Monopoly and thinking I'm going to make the best Monopoly film.
I could be keen for a Monopoly film.
And then making The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, it'd be like a Wall Street film.
Nothing particularly to do with Monopoly.
Yeah, it's just
Monopoly, the movie.
It's just a Monopoly man trick.
Or like taking Trivial Pursuit and then making like a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire film. It just doesn't make
Slumdog Millionaire, just rename it Trivial Pursuit.
But that's what I mean, but it doesn't make any sense. Name one other board game film.
Pie Face.
Bananagrams.
No, I mean, like, that's actually been made. Not even a board game, it's a tabletop game.
Cluedo. Cluedo could be a film.
Cluedo is
just
a film.
That's
is
just,
it?
Yeah. Is it?
Cluedo is a film.
Based on Cluedo.
Yeah, 100%.
Sure. Is it, it's just a crime drama.
I think so.
But the point I'm trying to make is that translating board games, tabletop games, things that are made to be played that way doesn't really work. Much in sort of the same way people miss the mark of video game movies because
I don't think none of us are arguing that this is a good idea.
No. I'm just making my point that this should never have been made, and the fact he fought for the rights and then sat in it for 10 years to raise funds to make this either means the director is an absolute idiot or he has some form of deep-rooted mental psychosis.
To be perfectly honest, he managed to raise funds to hire Marlon Wayans, Jeremy Irons.
But bear in mind, this is before Marlon Wayans was in the bigger time. I think he'd just done, what's it, the...
I don't know, was Marlon Wayans ever in the big time?
He's fairly popular.
White Chicks was pretty big.
Yeah, that was after this
anyway. What was that show that he was in, My Wife and Kids?
No, that's a different one.
No,
it's a different one's brother.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is he not in it?
No.
He probably may have been.
He probably made a passing appearance.
There are many Wayans brothers.
But they did manage to cast Jeremy Irons, which is a fair point. And the main character was played by, and I don't know if you guys remember this, there used to be that old, really crap Superman TV show called Lois and Clark.
No.
The Adventures of Superman.
No.
And it had Terry Hatcher in it. And Dean Cane playing Superman. This is way back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember it because I being a 90s child, I remember it being on TV and stuff. And
you're a year older then.
But I mean, you guys clearly don't remember this, so I've got to pull the age.
We're a different generation.
The age card here.
Completely different.
I used to be on TV all the time, and I can remember seeing it. The guy that played the main character played Jimmy Olsen in that, and I thought the face looked familiar, and I couldn't place him for ages. it's Jimmy Olsen. He's actually not really gone on to do a whole lot since Dungeons and Dragons.
Really?
Not a whole lot, no.
That surprises me. That's his stellar performance in this.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic.
He really stuck out.
He's been in some films such as Blood of Beasts, For the Cause, National Lampoon's Dorm Days 2, Super Capers, Off the Ledge.
Nice.
The House that Jack Built.
I think the point I'm making is not being anything big or mainstream since this.
Okay.
Unlike Jeremy Irons, who's going on to do fairly decent things.
The Lion King 2.
Batman, Superman. He did Eragon.
16 years later.
Eragon, another film about dragons, which was terrible.
I love the books. Eragon's good books, but the film is a piece of dragon shit.
Jeremy Irons was great in this. He was the best part of the whole movie.
Yeah, man, he really worked for what he got paid. Like, he had so much acting squeezed into his performance.
He overacted to the absolute hilt and hammed up his performance.
He put his heart into it.
He was fantastic.
That was great.
And he just chewed the scenery. I mean, he really did. He worked for that. I think he realised how stupid a production he was in.
Yeah.
And just thought, I'm here now, I may as well just, you know,
I'm gonna ham this bad boy up.
Yeah.
And he just delivered burger after burger.
It was delicious. It was good, man. I liked his performance. It was really funny.
Yeah, so
I mean, like, every other character is pretty forgettable. Like, even the dwarf character, like, didn't really...
No, I mean, he was introduced sort of randomly, and then he appeared again sort of randomly. Same with the elf chick.
And throughout the film, the main character just kind of went off by himself a lot of the time, even though there was, like, other supporting characters, which I guess is, again, the point of the D&D
story, game. Story reasons for that.
You need
well.
To have...
Yeah.
A team goes off well by himself.
And you're forgetting Davidoff.
But we'll get
Cool Water.
Davidoff Cool Water. Davidoff Adventure.
Mm-hmm. So there's a character called Damodar. He's like the henchman of Jeremy Irons' character Protheon.
His beautiful blue lipstick.
He's got blue lipstick on the whole time. he's a terrible character. But he's also he also hams up his performance. And instead of being threatening, he tends to whisper. he was quite good. But anyway,
let's crack into the plot.
Let's crack into the plot, because this is the important part. Now, boys, Dungeons & Dragons film, you think they may want to incorporate...
People playing it?
Playing the people playing the
game.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, that could have been a fun way to get the audience into the film.
You look at the box, you think it's going to start kind of like Stranger Things. You've got like all these nerdy kids on the table, and they're like... Maybe they've got like some kind of...
going into their imaginations and
things. Yeah, you're like, oh, my uncle gave me this new this new figure for the game.
Things,
and that like drags them in.
Whoa. Things could have changed in like the game depending on like, you know, what they roll. So you'd have absolutely ludicrous situations. You could have them doing really cool, crazy stunts by, you know, how they roll the dice. And it could have actually... I mean, from that perspective, it actually could have worked okay. Have it be like... a film inside a game, that would have been
still a shit film.
Yeah, but you'd have more capacity for fun and high
more to do with Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, and it'd be the actors acting as it'd be actors acting playing
as,
the game acting again as the characters. That could have been fun, but there's nothing to do really with the actual game aside from some lore points in the film.
Yeah.
But the plot opens with a very... And all the establishing shots in this film, I don't know if you guys noticed, it's a sweeping aerial shot of a CG building.
Yeah, very poor CG.
This sweeps round and in.
And so, in one of the parts, they're, like, they're going through the sewers and it looked like a clip out of Legends of Grimrock, the game.
Yeah.
Like, it was very claustrophobic walls
this
and all things.
Scene I was... Talking about the starting
scene. The very first scene when you come in.
Straight from a video game.
You sweep round the bridge into the sewer and you're introduced to Protheon and Davidoff. Prometheus and Davidoff. Never quite made sense to me what actually was happening in that scene.
There was a...
You see people turning gears and...
There was a spinning orb in the middle of the room that had a staff within it. And Protheon walks up and takes the staff out of it and is very chuffed about the creation of this staff.
Saying,
behind,
yes,
at last, my destiny.
It's all about his destiny.
And then this gate opens up and shows us a very well-animated dragon.
Yeah.
And a well-animated dungeon, which it was held within. And we figure out that this staff is meant to control
the dragons.
So it walks out, and Jeremy Irons seems to be controlling Miss Dragon with kind of limited success, and it kind of like starts to vibrate and it explodes, and the dragon gets loose, so the staff isn't working.
So he uses his magic and makes the gate fall on top of the dragon, impaling it, and then we have some of the best blood CGI
just pouring out
ever. But it's like thick syrup.
Yeah. They didn't even use like practical effects for that, which would have been really easy. They animated the blood going down the stairs.
Yeah, I mean, I'd admit, I would have used practical.
Yeah.
Just because it would look better.
I'm a sucker for practical effects.
But CG. And the weird thing in this film is the only people that ever get gory deaths that have blood are dragons.
Yes, there's no other
blood. And it's always the CGI, gloopy, thick blood.
Yeah.
And they have some quite horrific deaths, the dragons.
Yeah.
But anyway, the dragon's blood hits the water for sewer and creates a fire.
As we all know.
And that's how we get.
It's flammable.
Well, obviously.
Maybe
it'll
be, that may be.
And dragon's tears
are made of jelly beans. Sorry.
So as I said, we get introduced to our two main characters who are watching the fire. It's a horrific blue screen and they're talking to each other, having banter, and this is Snails and the main character who I cannot remember. Ridley
and Snails.
Ridley and Snails.
Classic names for so D&D characters.
Snails is Marlon Wayans and Ridley is
Jimmy Olsen.
Who's just nondescript
white guy.
I think they're trying to do like a Han Solo thing with him that just didn't.
Oh, Han Solo and Lando.
Work. Yeah. No, not Han Solo and Lando. More like Han Solo and Jar Jar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But they're introduced and that's. If anybody here started drawing comparisons to things in The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And obviously with the marketing of the film and some stuff in the back of the box, they seem to be comparing the film in a good way to The Phantom Menace, which in and of itself isn't a great comparison because The Phantom Menace is not a great film.
No, I think maybe that review was getting at that. The thing is, with those reviews on the cover, we never saw what score that they gave it. It's literally just the words on it. So it's like, says a non-stop action adventure.
No, like you get like places that do that. They'll literally take the one good thing from a negative review and paste it on a poster or something.
It's like the sentence would have went, "You'll love it if you love The Phantom Menace." That's where they end it. But it goes on to say,
"But The Phantom Menace is
fucking
terrible
piece of shit."
Are you an angel?
Are you an angel? Hey, son. That's from film. Attack of the Clones.
Oh. To be fair, I think Attack of the Clones is worse, but anyway.
I think Attack of the Clones is worse, but this is a complete side.
That's the next film.
I actually watched the three prequels recently, back to back. And I think it's only then you can appreciate how bad the first two really are.
Mm.
I've not seen them in a while.
And the CG doesn't
even the third one's bad. Like,
the
dialogue is shocking.
The third one's bad, but
even Ewan McGregor can't save the dialogue.
It's not
killing younglings.
It's not as bad. It's there are things in that film that are redeemable.
There's stuff,
as opposed to the first two, there's not really.
There's stuff that I'd never noticed in like them, like in Attack of the Clones when Padme and Anakin are like having dinner together, and you like uses the force for an apple. But it's like a CGI pear. She takes like a fake bite out of it, but the pear just disappears a little bit. And she's like, oh, that's weird.
And so I watched them back to back, and I watched all the documentaries of the making of them.
Mm-hmm.
And see some of the stuff George Lucas did in that? It's mental.
He's not, like, a writer.
He's not even really like a director. He took a dozen takes. He then like using the power of computer technology spliced them together to form this perfect tape, which means everything else seemed dead robotic.
Yeah.
Even things like how find a network
connection. That's a shame. No. Oh no.
Speaking of robots.
Coming for
that
us.
Was my phone, I'm sorry.
Skynet. Skynet.
There you have it.
Thanks.
Anyway,
back to Star Wars, which is
back to Star Wars, which is not the film we reviewed. But he'd do things like even flip the way the actors' eyes were moving in scenes, and it's just insane what he was doing in those films.
Yeah,
but he kind of went out of control with the CGI. Like that's why he went back and edited the old ones and put in aliens and characters that didn't need to be there.
Yeah, and there's the whole scene in Return of the Jedi at Jabba's Palace, which eliminates any tension when they have them come out and sing.
The pop song or whatever.
So, you know, George Lucas is not terrible because he gave us the original trilogy. Well, actually, he gave us the idea of the original trilogy, but he didn't direct.
I think what people generally say is that George Lucas can create a good world and universe, but he is not a storyteller.
Yeah,
he did the first one pretty well.
Well,
New Hope has its flaws. Empire Strikes Back is an incredible film. Like,
yeah.
The guy that directed that did a much better job.
But he's got a problem with dialogue. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't let actors convey things just.
But I wanted to go to the Tashi station to pick up some power converters.
You can do that after you've done your chores.
But you can't let that just convey emotion through, expression. He's got to have them state everything that they're feeling. Which makes all the scenes of Anakin and Padme completely insufferable. So, yeah.
What?
Star Wars is. The prequels are not.
Where did we come from? Oh, yeah, because we're comparing to the Phantom.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things in the start of the film that you can draw comparisons to Star Wars, you know, Han Solo, Jar Jar Binks. There's a scene where it's like a Senate meeting in what looks like a hall.
But we're not there yet.
No,
I'm just saying.
No, but that, there's a lot.
I'm just proving my comparison. There's you know, like a Senate meeting in a hall looks like it'd be taking place in Theed Palace in Naboo. There's an old, you know, surly white man with a big white beard. Like the guy who you know, advises that it must be an invasion. Yeah,
communications disruption can only mean one thing. Invasion. I love that guy. I can't remember his name.
No,
I don't think his name's important.
Just like
Naboo advisor.
Fucking no messenger, just like always goes to the extreme every time.
Then you've got Protheon, who is not dissimilar to Palpatine in the way he is with the Senate, you know.
True.
He wears a nice white robe and he tries to talk them up and stuff.
Hey, I'm a good guy. And then when he's with the baddies, he's got his hood up. Yeah. His black gear.
Yeah, then you've got the Queen, who's not dissimilar to Amidala.
Yeah, pretty much the same as Amidala. She wears different fancy costumes in every scene she's in.
I'm not saying that they were copying off probably what was at the time one of the most popular films.
Mm, true.
All I'm saying is the amount of similarities at the start was hard for me to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
And it might just be the style of filmmaking at the time, but I don't think it was.
And some of the music as well. That was
cool. Yeah. Yeah, the bad guy sort of theme
was like the Imperial March, pretty much.
Yeah, well, it was
almost not exactly, but it was close.
But like, the first note definitely sounded like it.
It was like dun dun. Dun-dun-dun. That's too jazzy. Dun-dun-dun.
Hey!
Bam! Bam! Get out the bad guys.
Get to control some dragons.
And then there's Snails, played by Marlon Wayans.
Mm-hmm.
He is not dissimilar to Jar Jar.
No.
In many ways, especially not in the, you know, the portrayal you give black people in cinema.
Yeah, it's not great.
He's quite.
Just a bumbling idiot.
So when the dragon blood went into the water, it caused a fire. And our two young ruffians see the fire as an opportunity because they're both thieves. So they think, we'll break into the Mage Academy, we'll use this fire as a distraction, we'll see what we can get out of it. So they sneak up, get on in.
But while that's happening, while they're deciding that Davidoff Coolwater's been tasked to go to the Mage Academy and retrieve a scroll which would lead to a staff that you can control the dragons with.
Yes.
That I followed that correctly.
That sounds pretty accurate.
So we cut to the Mage's Guild and we get introduced to Marla. Is that her name? We'll call her Mars. So we get introduced to Mars,
the Roman god of war.
The Roman god of war, who is a female Mage's apprentice,
like a librarian. Yeah, she's more of an apprentice.
More of an apprentice,
like a mage.
Who's filed something away poorly.
Pretty much, that's.
And she gets her knuckles wrapped for that one.
Oof, you better believe.
Don't mess it out. Not in the Mage's Academy.
No, you can't just be putting scrolls anywhere.
Just don't willy nilly, like.
They're important to the preservation of the Mage's Guild.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if the city's burning down? You need the non-city burning down scroll.
You go through the files and they're not in order?
Not in order, you can't find it, city burns down.
Can't be dealing with that.
So, they need to be in order. She gets her knuckles wrapped. You know, we as an audience are quite, you know, not really caring at all at this point because the characters are just terrible.
Yeah.
We get introduced to her, we get introduced again to the surly white bearded man. Who comes in and he is looking for a specific scroll. It's been fairly wrong, but he finds it anyway. It's right beside him, literally to the right of him.
Yeah.
And he takes it to his desk and we discover that he can't access the scroll. He can't read it properly at that point in time.
Yeah.
It's too hard to break.
It's too hard to break.
It's a tough one. He's using all his magic.
The code on it.
Yeah.
And Davidoff Coolwater comes scrolling in.
Scrolling in.
Get it? It's a pun.
Punny.
Scrolls right in.
Okay.
and demands you know, to know where the scroll is. It's on his desk. He wants to know where the scroll is, and he won't tell him. Well, that's happening, Andrew. Do you want to tell us what our two protagonists are doing?
Yes, our protagonists are rustling and scrambling their way through the room in the mage's tower, looking for delicious treasures to take home with them. And they're going through, and there's like a dragon skeleton there. Mylan Wayans picks up a dragon tooth.
A polystyrene dragon tooth.
But it's too big. And he's like, no, leave it. And he picks up a gold tooth. He's like, no, it's too big. They get all kind of mischief, and then they're like breaking things, and just two boys having a bit of fun.
Then
Mars walks in, is like, what are you guys doing here? And Marlon is like, oh, we're the cleaning crew. Oh, this is dirty. Let's clean this up. She's like, more like the cleanup crew, because you guys are thieves. And like, damn. They had like some kind of back and forth, and then she gets them in a rope, a magic spell rope,
and they're like, ah, oh.
Like, I got you boys, I'm gonna take you to the police. And then you hear the kerfuffle with the old man and Davidoff adventure,
and she runs off,
and they're like, runs off, but
they're in tow with her magic, so
they get dragged along,
entangled.
Marlon Wayans is making quite a deal of it. Mm-hmm. His high pitched screaming
that
he's known for in every film that he's in.
That was my best rendition.
And that's how they get introduced to Davidoff Coolwater. And he breaks the old man's shoulder, which kills him
immediately.
In one movement.
Yep, one hand on the shoulder.
But not before the old man flings the scroll of magic to his mage's apprentice. She grabs it, opens a portal, jumps through. Our two pals in tow, and
the rest of Davidoff and his gang somehow managed to get through the portal in time as well. I would have thought she would have closed it.
But
I mean, in the rest of the film, all the portals close.
Like almost instantly, but this time portals just stays open a little bit longer. And then,
so they're in the streets of this city that we're in, and they're trying to escape. They're bustling through the crowds, and they end up in a pile of garbage. Which is apparently where our dwarf friend lives.
We don't have a name for him, do we?
No, I don't think his name was mentioned once.
Shall we give him a name?
Yeah.
What, Ross? We say one word, and then that'll be his name.
Scruff.
Elwood.
Bonefist.
Scruff Elwood Bonefist.
Yeah.
So Bonefist, Mr. Bonefist, just comes out of the garbage pile. You're like, is this a homeless man? Is this a bum? Is this Oscar the Grouch? I'm not sure. And he's like, I don't even know what he says. He's just like, get out of here. And then they're like, oh no, but the guards are after us. And one of the guards knocks his helmet off, and he has a rager.
And he's like, you son,
you, I'm coming for you. And then he's like,
tries to swing his axe at Davidoff, and he's like, bitch, please.
Which is always what you should do when, you know, a guard knocks your helmet off.
Exactly.
But then dwarf sweeps the leg off and knocks him down.
Damn.
And then bolts
back into the pile of garbage and dives into his little hole.
Everybody else dives into the hole, but turns out the hole itself leads directly to a sewer,
which apparently the dwarf was living in.
Mm-hmm.
Living on a slope
as like a watery slide into the sewers. And they go down and they escape the city.
Or escape that part of the city.
Yeah, they go and they head to a pub.
They do head to a pub.
But Davidoff Coolwater returns to report his failure to Prometheus.
He does.
And Prometheus is like, that's not any good. Saps him some magic, and he puts a creature inside of Davidoff Coolwater.
Yeah.
Which is slowly killing him and going to lead to his imminent demise if he doesn't get the girl. So now Davidoff's got motivation. You know, his character's got something there that he wants fixed for himself. So we understand why Davidoff does what he does. You know,
it's more than just a being his master. He's got personal stake in getting the job done.
We can connect with him now because, you know, any of us that would get a life-threatening illness would instantly do whatever we could to fix it.
Exactly.
If some old wizard were to curse us.
I mean, it's already happened. So we can relate to this.
Yeah.
Mind that time.
We have to.
That we went to the old wizard's house and he curses them.
Oh, and yeah.
We have to finish. We have to record a podcast every so often.
Fuck.
Otherwise.
Otherwise, we all have
our fate is sealed. our lips are sealed forever. Exactly. We can no longer talk.
What was his name again?
Who?
Alcazar.
Alcazar von.
Von Springletack.
Springletack.
Yeah.
So never go to his house.
Yeah.
That was our main mistake.
Yeah. He's a dodgy character.
Mm.
Good laugh though.
Aye, top man.
Top
man.
Actually, top man.
You know, the whole thing was top bands.
I mean, the curse was just for the lulls.
Yeah.
Like, mum, boys, have you a laugh?
Yeah, boys, like, just look. Let us curse you.
Oh, that's bizarre. But we end up in the pub, which is, again, reminiscent of Star Wars, and it's just like a cantina scene. Got all these crazy, wonderful characters and crazy music
who
playing.
May or may not be part of the D&D lore.
I didn't see any particular D&D looking characters. There's like a goblin kind of guy.
Mm. Yeah.
It didn't really look like any kind
it's of sort thing. Of, a lot of them looked...
more alien.
I mean, I'm a dungeon master, so I've got all the books,
the
and I've got the like the compendiums and stuff. I didn't see very much in the way of creatures from like the Monster Manual. I did see creatures that I'm pretty sure were like rejects from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
A couple of those. I know, I was expecting to see like a kobold kicking about, but I couldn't see any kobolds. And I couldn't see like any halflings. No, actually, that's wrong. I could see some halflings there in the pub stealing people's ale. So, you know, that's barely true to the race. But on the whole, there wasn't a whole... You think they'd add a few more wee like, winks and
yeah, exactly.
And there was
it's
like,
the Dungeons and Dragons.
Ah, you know what this is. You know what this is. Because, I mean, they don't really add in very, very much. I was expecting maybe like a mimic chest at one point. There's nothing.
No. Some of the staples.
Yeah, I mean, the added in a beholder at one point, you see them terribly animated CGI.
Just felt
literally,
like, literally for the point
it's
of
literally
saying,
there for
a beholder.
5-10 seconds. It's not featured again, but the bad guys could have used the beholder in the scenes it was in, probably to have a better outcome for themselves. So, you know.
Maybe it was a sex leave.
Correct. This had this
got
had
a hands, got a eyes.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of soldiers, a lot of lonely soldiers.
I don't think I'd like to be a
beauty's in the eye of the beholder, if you know what I mean.
Oh god.
That was terrible.
Oh. Right, can it? Podcast done.
So where are we, sorry?
Cantina scene. What
they're
doing
there. Oh yeah, they're all upstairs in like a little private room and they've got the scroll out trying to figure it out. The dwarf boy's munching down on a big plate full of chicken.
Alright, as he does.
What's the main guy called? Matt?
Ridley?
Ridley.
Ridley.
Ridley is like looking at the screen, it's like, oh, it's like my old father used to have.
My old father.
My old father.
My new father's just a bit of a dick.
My new stepdad.
My old dad.
My old dad. Was
he's
like,
show.
He used to get this scroll and put his hands exactly like this.
No, it wasn't that scroll. I used to have a scroll like this in the red locks. You know, he'd put his hands on the paper, say these words.
No, in the exact right rune bit. So he's like, he puts his fingers exactly here. And he said something like this. It was like, Eleanor, Sarah, Bandai. And then he's like, no, Bandora. All right, okay, of course. Eleanor, Sarah, Bandora. And he gets pulled into the scroll. Like, what?
Oh my god.
And then the librarian, Marge, grabs it and goes, Eleanor, Sarah, Bandora.
And she's in there as well.
Gets dragged in as well. You're like, god damn.
And we don't actually have a clue what really goes on inside that scroll.
No.
We know they find information out, but that we get treated to just the rest of the bar scene.
Yeah.
But with only the snails and
the dwarf.
The dwarf.
Foreign. What do we call them?
Bonefist? Mr.
Bonefist?
Bonefist,
yeah.
So Mr. Bonefist and Snails are in
Mr. Bonefist.
They're in the bar. And Snails sees a elven lady and thinks, oh, I'll go down and chat her up at the bar.
Sexy.
Orders their most expensive wine and whispers to the barkeep, make it your cheapest. So you know, we associate with him through that.
Really, he's just trying to pick up chicks.
Picking up chicks. He's just a lad.
But he's a bit skint, so he's got to go for the cheap wine.
That's
just a lad's lad.
The house wine.
The house special. The fine vintage.
Mm-hmm.
And the dwarf guy is still upstairs like, oh, why would you go with her? She's an elf. Clearly racist.
Yeah, he tries to convince him before he goes down to go for a dwarf, a £250 dwarf.
You need a £250 dwarf woman with hair on her chin that you can hang on to. And it's fucking violent humping motion of him grabbing onto a dwarf woman's beard.
Which Andrew just did.
Film rated 12 as well. Very inappropriate for
quite violent. But he notices Davidoff for men coming in the door with his blue lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
And his boys, and he's like, fuck, I've got to go down to Snail.
So he runs down the stairs with his axe, pushes one guy over and shouts, bar fight!
Oh yeah, bar fight, like, because that's what triggers a bar fight, when someone
the ultimate distraction.
Food fight! And he grabs Snail and is like, this is no time for romance! And a very Indiana Jones, no time for love, Dr. Jones! And drags him away in the escape. Leaving the lovely elven lady behind.
But we think, you know, there's more to her than meets the eye.
Mm-hmm. We're like, she's something special. Unforgettable.
She's a transformer.
50 Cent.
She.
Justin. Timberland. God damn.
So they run off after a bar fight into the
woods.
Woods? There's woods outside the bars in there?
Or probably outside of the city and... in a safe place that they can have a chat.
And then our protagonist in Mars come out of the school.
Yeah, with no indication of what's been going on. But
and they
decide
they need to go on this quest to get the red dragon
wreath in the school told them they need to get the staff.
We don't see any of this.
No,
so
this is just
because they probably couldn't afford it.
And then you're like, what is the motivation of... Ripley to go on this adventure.
Ridley, do you
Ridley.
Ripley. Ripley's an alien.
No, it's same character. Different universes.
We've talked about Ripley in almost every movie podcast. Because
Ripley's
watched.
Such a good character.
She is. We need to just watch Alien and do good friends, good movies.
I mean, it's not a bad movie. I mean, you can watch Alien Resurrection, that's a pretty terrible movie.
Is Sigourney in that?
Sigourney's in that. But she's not, I mean, she's still Ripley, but she's clone Ripley.
Spoilers.
She's got I mean, if I want to get around to it, I'm just, you know, just laying out there. And she's got some alien DNA mixed with hers.
Oh my god.
So she's got superpowers. So we should watch that, definitely.
Yeah, 100%. But Ripley's like, what is his motivation
Ripley.
For... Ripley, what is his motivation for going to get this girl? And Stan's is like, why do you want to go get this girl? We just get out of here, go back, and with all the stuff that we've stole. And then you're like... looks at the girl and he's like,
because we had sex in the scroll, Snails.
Oh,
the scroll.
That was the
implication
I got.
Yeah, 100%.
I didn't think
so. Snails is like, god damn, what? You go going after the scroll for a bitch? That's no.
Hot damn.
That's more racist
that's
than
cool.
anything in the film.
Oh dear.
But to be fair, it wasn't far off.
What was the part off? I mean, like, he toned it down a wee
he
bit
did.
More than you.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry, boys.
That's okay.
That's
man.
Okay.
I forgive you this time.
Many others may not. But at that point, he's kind of going back and forward, and then Ripley's like, no, come on, we get this red ruby, and once we've got it, we can sell it. And
it'll be the biggest.
Things.
He's like, it'll be the biggest score ever, and we're just using her to get the ruby.
Yeah. Really, right in front of her.
He's literally just lying right to his best friend's face.
Yeah.
Because
he's wanting, he's like,
he's wanting to be
trust me. And then Snail's just like, ah, I hate it when you say that. Man.
You got
but then
me there.
Then immediately changes his mind. He's like, but yeah, sure.
So he's like, don't touch me. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah, comment relief.
They decide they've got to go to the Thieves Guild.
Yes,
because
he's got the ruby, in the guild.
Yes,
in the guild.
So they go to the Thieves Guild, they go to the town and
quite... Oh, no, no, wait, wait. We need to convince, why is the dwarf going to come along?
Why is the dwarf coming?
And it's like,
oh,
as long as, who's going to pay me?
Ridley and Snails point to...
She will.
To Martha, yeah. She will, and she's like, we can discuss payment later.
And he says it's...
No, wait, he looks directly at the camera, shakes his head, and...
That's a terrible way to do business.
That which then exactly made me think that they never actually paid the actors, and they just told them that. So we can discuss payment later.
And that was a little injury.
Are we nudge, wink?
I don't know why they would put that in the film.
It was like the only part of the film where anyone looks directly at the camera.
So I like it when films break the fourth wall like this.
I hate it. There's literally no point.
I think it's even better when there's no point. It's just there and it happens. Like, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, there's a point to when he breaks the fourth wall every time.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's nice, but I love it when there's no point. There's no reason for it to be there. It doesn't fit with the tone of the movie. There's just a fourth wall break, and it's fantastic.
It felt so specific that I think it's got to do with the way the actors were being paid.
So they I don't know why they used that cut then. Like, why would he still keep that in?
I don't know. It was like... He would have to set up that shot. Like, the director would have to go, like, we're going to go right in the dwarf's face, and we get the reaction shot to this line. It's like so stupid.
So stupid.
And behind the dwarf, when he moves away... You see that the elven woman is following us.
Oh, she's in the tree.
Yeah. So she's privy to what they're up to and is following us. So we go to the next town and we're looking for the Thieves Guild now to see what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're asking about, as you do, you know, asking about, do you know where the Thieves Guild is? No, mate.
I don't know where the Thieves Guild is, mate.
And then the guy's like, get this town, stop asking questions, you'll be branded an outsider. And we don't like outsiders. So
they naturally decide to follow him.
They follow him. And eventually he kidnaps them all.
They get to the guild, and then he finds them and says, we told you, we don't want outsiders.
That's it.
And they take him to the guild leader, who is played by Richard O'Brien, known as, I think he wrote... Rocky Horror Picture Show, but I mostly know him as the host of The Crystal Maze. And I was checking on the Wikipedia page, and apparently his role in the film is a parody of the guy he plays in, like, The Crystal Maze.
I mean, he's got an actual maze that they have to go through.
Yeah, so he has, like, a guild
ruby.
So to get the ruby, they have to go through a guild maze. So apparently, like, they literally put a parody of The Crystal Maze in this film with the guild maze to get, like, the great ruby or whatever. I just thought that was insane. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
We thought it was really just like a little nod, but it sounds like this was 100% planned.
It says here, like, among the more notable features of the otherwise poorly received film are cameo appearances by Richard O'Brien and in brackets in a parody of his TV programme The Crystal Maze.
I mean, this kind of film, you don't need a parody within the film. That's but ridiculous. I enjoyed it and it was great.
That was the best, one of the best sequences for me. So he'd go beyond the maze, and then it cut back to Richard O'Brien, and he'd just be like, "Oh, shut up!"
Yeah,
because he was going through his death trap maze. So he was a good character. I felt.
Yeah, good.
He's quite funny. He goes through the guild maze, which consists of loads of booby traps, like swinging axes and flames. But he's got an audience the whole time while he's doing it, and Richard O'Brien's watching him too. So I'm just taking that as his fellow participants are watching him, just like, oh, you go over there. Oh. And Richard O'Brien's like, you've got 2 minutes, 2 minutes left. And I was like, get out.
And there was an actual sand timer in one of them.
But he just smacks it with his sword.
I like it. It's a good parody.
He goes through the first two challenges with no major issues, and then the third challenge seems impossible, and he's got a timer, so if he doesn't meet the time, then he's just going to get killed. So he just naturally just fucking swings his sword, destroys the sand timer, and wins. So he basically cheated the system, and then he gets the ruby.
Yeah.
And returns it to the, goes back to the guild there to say, I did it. And the guild leader is like, yo, you can, like, give me that now. And it's like, oh, but what about honor among thieves? And it's like, oh, but do you think I got this wealthy with honor?
And then Jabba move right there. So they're messing about, and then our good friend Davidoff Adventure comes in and shoots a couple of the henchmen, and Richard O'Brien's like, what is this?
Who are you?
And they come on down and they're like, we're here for the red ruby. And he's like, you're not gonna get it without a fight. You must be joking. Never. And then Richard O'Brien goes, I never joke when mages trespass in my guild. And I was like, I like it. That's very specific. You don't want mages coming into your guild.
True that.
I hate that shit. Hashtag mage problems. So they have a little scuffle and a scramble.
Then Ridley picks up the scroll like, this is the scroll you want. I'll set it on fire. So he sets the scroll on fire. I'll put it out if you clear a path. So then Davidoff Coolwater clears a path. Then Ridley immediately puts out the scroll, but walks out the path anyway. Then what happens? But I cannot remember.
Mars Mage Girl gets kidnapped, but I can't remember how she gets kidnapped.
This is part of, for me anyway, the film sort of blurs together and I can't quite remember any specific parts.
Yeah.
This is where the plot certainly sort of turned to mush. Not that there's much of a plot there.
Oh yeah, they have a scuffle and the guys all escape, but Mars, the librarian mage, gets captured.
Yeah.
How does she get captured? Do you remember? I can't see. That's the thing. I cannot remember.
I don't know. Was that the bit where he was fighting the guys? He had a sword at his side, but he was fighting them with a log.
Yeah, and I made the point. He's got a sword. Why he's fighting with a log?
Yeah,
because he just has to look cool.
But she's captured.
Did she not get captured and then go through a portal or something?
Yeah, probably.
They go through a portal, which then conveniently closes the minute they step through it.
That's it.
So.
But she gets captured and Davidoff, you know, interrogates her in a wee cell. And he's like, oh, Prometheus has put a creature in me. It's going to kill me. I need to find it so I can live.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, no, I can't help you.
He's like, well, fortunately, this thing can read your mind as well.
No, suck it out of her mind.
Yeah.
So
through her ears.
These two tentacles come out of his ears and suck the knowledge from her brain in a really weird scene.
It's disgusting. It's a bit like the thing. Like that kind of.
It's a wee bit. He's got his mouth open in a very sort of thing like manner. So.
It was gross. But he sucks the knowledge out. He's like, there's a key and a room. And he basically finds out like kind of where they're going or what they're gonna do.
Yeah, because they're going to.
He stole the scroll. He's dead.
But they're coming to save
Mars.
Yeah.
So
the guy decides that he fancies Mars.
So yeah,
it's not enough just to have the ruby. He needs to go.
He needs to
save her. So they've teamed up with
the elf women
at this point now, and she's now part of the gang
with all her cronies as well.
Her gang as well. Her crew. That they've all. Said that they're going to wait outside, along with the dwarf is going to wait outside while those two guys go in and try.
But they don't tell them that.
No.
The dwarf's ready to go and she's like, no, they need to do it themselves.
This is something only they can
Which
do.
Is like...
And the dwarf just goes, alright,
I feel like all of these parts of the film where they're meant to go in by themselves is parts where they couldn't afford the other actors on the same day.
Yeah. Or just put them in situations that otherwise they'd be okay. But they already, like, had the characters to move the plot forward, so they thought, we just, you know, take them back. Do we have to give them a reason? No, we don't have to give them a reason. It's a fantasy film, I believe. It's some sort of mumble jumble. So Snails and Ridley go in, but they split up because Snails is going to go find the scroll.
Yeah.
And Ridley is going to find Mars. So the scene cuts to Snail. Who's he first? And he's in Davidoff Coolwater's quarters.
Davidoff Champion.
And he's like going about stealing things. He finds a wee black magic pouch, picks it up, puts it in his bag. You know, goes to check out his four-poster hammock.
which was awesome. Mm-hmm. This is like bottom part hammock as a bed, then there's a top hammock above it, which the four posters come down from.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive design.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
There's a shisha next to it, man. That's the life.
We were all pretty smoking that shisha,
living the dream.
And even Marlon Wayans, Snails, he comments on the shisha.
He's like, damn, Davidoff, you got it going on.
So he turns around.
Always get it worked out.
He turns around and sees the scroll on the table, but he's got to walk over the carpet first. So he steps in the carpet and it turns to like
quicksand. Porridge!
Quicksand porridge.
Oh, man.
And Davidoff walks in and he's like, no, mate.
Need a hand.
Need a hand, that's the line.
Pulls him out of
the quicksand porridge carpet.
It looked like
carpet.
Porridge, it was pretty gross.
Pulls him out and starts just wailing on him.
Yeah, like.
Just starts beating him up, wanting to know if they've got the staff or is there something he wants to know again?
No, I don't know. That's asking for some information.
He wants the stone, that's it. He wants the ruby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he's just wailing on him. And then one of the Wayans pulls a knife and slashes him and runs away screaming. As you do.
As you do.
So he runs away through the thing. Well, this has happened. Ridley's found Mars. Saved her. They've had a wee hug and are leaving, but they get attacked by a couple of the guards. And can I just add as well, because we didn't touch on this, the scene just before they go into here, this is the scene where they have the beholders. You know, they show the beholders outside guarding this place.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few of them. They never come up again in this entire scene. Even though they would probably have been quite useful to have about.
Very interesting thing to have to fight.
Yeah, but I'm assuming the CGI for it would have cost too much.
Yeah.
I mean, there's almost no practical effects in this film.
There's not really. Like, the carpet was one.
The carpet's one.
That was a practical effect.
But
that's just a sand
pit. Aside from
that,
mostly CGI.
100%, yeah.
And it's really, really
and bad
CGI.
Props as well. Like, armor looks like Power Rangers, baddie armor. And all the weapons look like plastic like that as well.
Yeah. It's like what Goldar wears, but spray painted black.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Fantastic. But, they could have used the beholders here to, you know, trap our heroes. You know, they didn't. And that seems really stupid. But, hey, I'm not the director.
Yeah, no.
It's true.
Or a dungeon master in
or
this case.
True. I think we should remake this film.
I'd be up for that.
That'd be sweet.
Using our own cast of characters like El Shapiro, Matthew the author.
Scroty the Goblin.
Scroty the Goblin. You know, the
wonderful fleshed out characters. Ready for adventure.
They were actually fairly fleshed out. I did backstories for all of them.
Wasn't my backstory just Matthew the Otter, Matthew the Otter, Matthew the Otter?
No. You're a sentient otter, but the only one of your kind, and you're trying to bring about otter dominance.
Oh, yes, I was.
And then
by slowly murdering everyone.
Andrew's character, El Shapiro, has got a brother called El Nobero. And El Shapiro is the bard, and El Nobero is a luchador wrestler.
I wish I'd got that character.
I wanted to be him.
So, well, it's too bad.
Just keep dying until you get him.
I just pick one.
The character sheets are random.
And I've made it so, you know, if El Nobero doesn't get picked by one of the character sheets at random, then El Shapiro can go on as normal, but otherwise the two of them can go about together and El Shapiro can play songs of El Nobero. And it's fantastic.
And they've power got, up his, like, wrestling moves.
They've got a whole history. I even wrote a song for El Shapiro.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic. I mean, all my characters are fairly well thought out.
More thought out than this film.
More thought out than this film. even Scroty the Goblin as well. Like, he had, like, you know, he's an exiled prince from Scroton.
Oh, yeah.
Scroton was an island off the coast. Being exiled because they thought he murdered the king, but he hadn't. It's actually all. There's a whole quest line for political intrigue, but they never, for some reason, you know, you can do all. Of all the best in the world, you can make the best storylines for your party to stumble across, but even with the most hints and the most sort of prodding you can, sometimes you just won't go the places you want the quest to be.
No, we'll spend an entire game session figuring out if a bartender's a baddie or not, who is in.
Or you'll spend the whole, like, 4 hours trying to rob someone and have it all fail. And I mean, that's an example of Dungeons & Dragons. That was a natural
freedom to do what you want.
That was a natural thing. I didn't plan that. You guys wanted to do it. We did it, and that's sort of the nature of Dungeons & Dragons that this film doesn't capture that sort of spontaneity. You can really do anything. It's all just down to the dice roll. And obviously, if your dungeon master can accommodate that. I mean, a lot of the stuff you guys have done in your adventures has just been off the cuff.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to try and rein you in to actually continue the main quest that I designed, which is why I've only done a few parts of the main quest.
Exactly.
The film fails to capture that in almost every aspect.
100%.
Especially the characters. And understand that we've stopped talking about the plot, because I don't think any of us can properly remember how the rest of this plays out beat for beat.
Pretty standard plot. It's like, it just follows it.
Yeah. It's like, just, there's just like,
there's a set piece, then they come back together, they have a bit of chill time.
There's nothing there like normal Dungeons & Dragons. There's no betrayal or twist. There's no...
You know, like, as a role, a part of the, I guess the main point of Dungeons & Dragons is the role play. So you need to feel like you are the character, you're a part of the adventure. This film was like, in no means did I feel related to any of the characters.
No, there's no...
By no means did I feel...
There's no sense of freedom either. It's not like...
Nah.
They always go to very linear sort of places. And their bartender they go and see, was he cleaning glasses?
I honestly don't remember, he might have been.
No.
He wasn't.
Just serving cheap wine.
Check the tape.
I'll tell you, he was not. I looked. And that pulled me right out of the film.
0 stars.
Right out of the film.
We're near the end now. So
anyway, yeah. So Davidoff Coolwater kills snails in front of
Damn.
Boom. Damn. Just no lead up, just bam.
You don't need to know the lead up. It just happens.
It does. It just happens.
So Davidoff Coolwater.
Ridley has a very, very dramatic response.
Ridley was the best character in the film.
To be fair, friend did.
No, Jeremy Irons was the best character in the film. Snails just...
I like Marlon Wayans.
Yeah. So yes, Snails dies. Ridley screams.
But not before passing the scroll to them.
In the black magic bag.
Yep.
Which fell out of his pocket.
So Ridley has a mental breakdown and screams no for about 3 minutes. So while that's happening, Mars picks up the black magic bag, and I don't know what spell she uses, but she uses a spell, knocks him dabbed off for about 20 seconds.
Probably less than that.
Yeah.
Davidoff gets back up, stabs Ridley.
No. He'd already stabbed him.
Yeah.
Oh, he stabbed him?
He'd already stabbed him, and he was going to give the killing blow, and then she used the magic.
She used the magic, then they jump through the portal. But the point is, Ridley's been stabbed through the collarbone, and what I'd imagine is quite a serious area. Because if you put it down
100%,
there, that's like your lung, and everything's like there.
Got
so you think he died, but he doesn't die, and then he goes to Lothlorien.
Pretty much Lothlorien. There's a shiny elf place with lights in the trees.
Yeah,
and there's a creepy elf guy.
And they meet Galadriel, aka Tom Baker.
Tom Baker.
Oh yeah.
Who is the fourth Doctor, if you don't know, and he uses some of his. He does a bit of Matt Smith here, and uses some of his regeneration energy to regenerate our main character. And if you don't watch Doctor Who and don't understand the reference, you probably should.
Alright, I don't watch Doctor Who.
Well, fucking watch it.
Whoa,
I've not seen any of the new ones. You
fucking watch it.
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
Anyway, right.
He is traveling.
So he gets all healed up, patched up.
Yeah. Patched up, and then the scene cuts to the queen riding a golden dragon, commanding other golden dragons to destroy a tower that Prometheus is in. There's no lead up, there's no build up.
Just dragons have appeared.
It's a hard cut to that scene.
I think one of the scenes, the Empress, the mages kind of rule over this world, and anyone else is kind of just like a slave. They just have to kind of get on with life. And the Empress is like, everyone needs to be equal. So she has a staff of power that controls the golden dragons, and the mages have said that because of your views, we're going to take it from you, and you have 3 days to do that. On the final day, she says, no, I'd rather have civil war than give you up the dragon powers. And that's where potentially the fight has came from.
It's not really civil war, it's just this queen decides, fuck my kingdom.
I'm going to
fuck this guy. I'm
going to
fucking wreck everything, because I'm just going to unleash a horde of dragons. And she unleashes about 100 gold dragons on our city.
So it goes from one scene that she's in going, I guess it's Civil War then, to absolute destruction of the entire city with 1,000,000 golden dragons, which we've only seen one of before, which would cover quickly, but now completely destroying the city and now going after all the dark mages in their tower.
Yeah, it's not great. And there's no tension, there's no anything. It's full of terrible CGI. I think a lot of the dragons that fly out in the background are probably stock dragons they've had, and they flipped about to give the illusion there's more going on than there probably is. I didn't take the time to look at it, but with how cheaply the rest of the film is, I can only imagine that's what happened. I mean, one thing in the film's credit, but saying that about cheapness, at least they had a variety of sets.
I'd say so.
That was quite.
I'd say it was
good.
The sets at least were okay.
The bar set especially was.
The props were rubbish.
That was quite good.
The CGI was rubbish, but the sets were okay.
Yeah.
They weren't terrible.
Sort of hokey 90s sets, but they were good hokey 90s.
Yeah, like the
set.
Village bits were okay. The marketplaces. The
bar I thought was a very well designed set. The way
bar
it had
was
like
fun.
The three levels going up.
I like that.
The establishing shot there where the camera panned up with the pint of beer. Is it was somebody stole it and worked it up.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very good shot compared to the rest of and the only other shot I think was very good was when the main character goes down the dungeon.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where we are.
In fact, we've missed that whole scene because we can't remember what happened because it's so boring.
So that
abyss scene.
Our heroes have the ruby and they have the map, so they've found the dungeon they need to go into to get the dragon staff.
Yeah, while this is happening, the city's under attack, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
And at this point I said, you know, the hero's got to go in himself because he can't get past this force barrier. So I said, how much do you think, or bet, Davidoff Coolwater will be there, captured the other characters by the time the main hero comes out? Was I right?
You were 100% right.
I mean, I could write this.
You could have
Dungeon Master this whole film.
Could have wrote this film, yeah.
So he goes in, gets the thing off a skeleton that talks to him and tells him he can.
And Ross was like, this is just like the Jungle Run parody. Where you put the ruby in.
Oh yeah, because he had to put the ruby in like a slot.
Oh, look out.
That's another scene that just sort of happens.
Yeah, I was a bit dull.
He
goes into the dragon staff and a skeleton guy's holding it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I got the staff.
I've been cursed to guard the staff. Or is there something about it?
Yeah.
So he's holding the red dragon staff. Our main hero takes it, then walks outside. Davidoff Coolwater's captured all his friends. He's like, give us a staff or I'll kill your friends. Ridley gives him the staff. Davidoff then gets away, gives the staff to Prometheus while the city's sort of burning down.
Yeah.
So you see the queen riding on her gold dragon with her gold staff, controlling the gold dragons. Prometheus summons red dragons to fight the gold dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And
our heroes follow them through the portal and they're now all in
they're all
tower.
In the same place. Then they all fight. Well, no, the main Ridley fights Davidoff and kills him.
Yep.
By doing a corkscrew.
A corkscrew moonsault over his body and stabs him in the back. Proper wrestling
move. You know the 20 does something good for once. D&D reference, guys. Then.
D20.
Blaze it. Then.
Roll it.
Much better.
Then he starts to fight Prometheus, who's still got the red staff. And, you know, Prometheus slaps him about a bit. Mars appears, Prometheus slaps her about a bit. The end of the dwarf.
He slaps him about
a bit.
Elf appears. She
slaps
gets slapped
her
a bit.
He starts monologuing to the main character about how he can't take his destiny from him. The main
character.
The main character picks up the red dragon's staff.
Yeah.
And is able to control them a bit to stop doing what they're doing and fall from the sky. In flaming fireballs.
Is that what happened?
I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Because I saw lots of flaming fireballs
I'm just putting the two and two together because it's never explained.
I think you're right, mate.
So the flaming fireballs, he's like, no, you can't do this. The most hammy performance ever, it's fantastic. Then the gold, the queen appears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And tells him he can't be doing this and that. Then she summons a gold dragon to eat him.
Yep.
Yep.
He's dead.
He's dead.
He's gone.
And Ridley breaks the red dragon staff.
Yep.
With his sword. Then it cuts to...
No one man should have all that power.
You know, she's like, oh, thank you to all of you, the four heroes. You know, she's awfully happy for herself, considering she's probably just murdered, like, half her kingdom.
Half the kingdom, yeah.
Then it cuts to, like, a day later, maybe 2 days later. They're all wearing black. He's looking very Han Solo-esque, and he's over Snail's grave. And
it's literally just a rock that says Snails on it. It's been inscribed on it.
He puts the red ruby down, gives a wee monologue about how sad he is, and you know.
It's like giving him the ruby, like, got the biggest score ever, pal.
Yeah, but
look where I am now.
Then the ruby glows, then they all stand over the ruby and put their hands together.
No. The snail's engraving on the rock disappears.
That disappears, it gets ungraved. Then they all stand and put their hands over the stone, and they all turn into sparks of light, and the film ends.
So,
it's a pretty shit ending.
So I'm assuming in the end, right, this is my interpretation, and feel free to add yours in or tell me if I'm wrong, but he puts the stone down. Snails is so angry about this, and he's now obviously a spirit, he's a wraith, he's got these otherworldly powers. He's so angry that he died and he can't touch the stone. He uses his wraith-like abilities channeled through the power, you know, the unstable power of the stones.
Mm-hmm.
When they put their hands over, he turns them all into dust, and that's the dust that flies about. He kills them all so they can join him in the afterlife. And that's my interpretation. I could be wrong.
I think maybe it was like, in terms of it being Dungeons and Dragons, maybe it all was just a game. That was the end of the adventure.
Time for the next one. Maybe Snails was the DM and he's like, get the fuck out of there. Let's go. But the DM that put himself in the game for some reason.
God.
He got himself more killed. Even though he knows what's going to happen.
So that was it was some film. I enjoyed it a lot. Like,
how would you rate it?
Fantasy fan.
It was done.
Rotten Tomatoes have given it 10%. That's good. It's a good score. Out of the shit movie scale, I'm gonna give it a 7 out of 10. But that's a different scale to real movie scale.
I don't even know what that scale entails.
I guess, like,
would you rate
how much enjoyment did you get out of a terrible movie? Is how the scale sort of works.
Yeah. Like, I do not rate that as by any means a good movie, but on the bad movie scale and for what we needed out of it, I'd say 7 out of 10.
I would agree.
It was maybe not as outrageous as other films.
I would actually agree with you guys. This is the first unanimous film we've had. A 7. I mean,
it should be like a siren or something for us.
The most enjoyment I had was Jeremy Irons.
Jeremy Irons is sick.
The good guys, bad movies, nope. seal of approval. Stamp it.
If you're looking for a terrible fantasy movie, because you've watched Lord of the Rings too many times and you've appreciated the good sort of filmmaking that went into that. And
you've watched Your Highness, but you want something a bit worse than that. And this is your film.
Yeah, you're having a couple of beers with your friends and you want something to laugh at. This film would...
Got you covered, mate.
Fill that gap. There's quite a few funny cutaways and stuff. Yeah.
I wish Your Highness myself the other day. It's not a film that you should watch by yourself.
Your Highness is a terrible movie.
Yeah, it's like...
I'd bit of the Minotaur's penis and stuff.
I'd watch it with people, but I was like... But that's another...
That's another thing.
Another film.
We don't need to talk about tonight.
Let's please not talk about Your Highness.
But compared to the game of Dungeons and Dragons... You guys have played. Do you think it reflects any part of it accurately?
No, not even slightly. It was a pretty like block by block storyline in a fantasy setting that could have really had any title. It could have really interchangeable in all senses.
I don't think the rights for it, they didn't need to get the rights, because just made that film.
No.
Like, this storyline could have applied to anything. This could have been like a sci-fi film. This could have been... It's just the set pieces that made it fantasy. There's nothing story-wise that linked itself to being...
I mean, it wasn't much a story, really.
Yeah.
And Dungeons & Dragons itself as a game is all about the story, and the story you make and the story you tell.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of didn't really have anything strong. But no, that sort of encapsulates that film fairly well. It's not a great movie.
You can only play that for so long.
You heard it here.
That's like the teaser.
From the slums of Shaolin.
That's the teaser for the trailer.
So that's us signing off for another week.
H-O-D, man.
Hopefully you enjoyed this.
An outro song?
Peace out.
Oh, you normally rap something about the film.
Yeah.
Peace out.
Anyway, we're out. Thanks for listening again, guys. Thanks for staying about for the tangents. See you next time.
Laters.
METHOD, man. METHOD.